W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
AP News for Friday, December 9th. I'm Ben Thomas.
Russian President Vladimir Putin says more prisoner exchanges with the U.S. are possible after a swap of arms dealer Victor Boot for basketball star Brittany Griner. The U.S. is hoping to also win freedom for Paul Whelan, jailed since December 2018 on espionage charges. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby.
We register what Mr. Putin said. Let's see what he actually does.
A former Minneapolis police officer who kneeled on George Floyd's back as another officer kneeled on his neck has been sentenced to 3.5 years in prison. Shelley Adler has details.
J. Alexander King pleaded guilty in October to a state count of aiding and abetting second-degree manslaughter. In exchange, a charge of aiding and abetting murder was dropped. King is already serving a federal sentence for violating Floyd's civil rights. The state and federal sentence of 3 years will be served at the same time. I'm Shelley Adler.
Arizona Senator Kyrsten Sinema has switched her registration from Democrat to Independent, but she's not planning to caucus with Republicans, and White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre says,
we see this as a decision that she has made, but we do not see a change in our Democratic majority.
The Supreme Court says it will hear a free speech case involving a scam. Norman Hall explains.
The case the High Court agreed to hear involves the operator of a Sacramento, California nonprofit called Americans Helping America Chamber of Commerce. The government said that between 2012 and 2016, the operator, Helaman Hansen, persuaded at least 471 people to join his adult adoption program, even though he knew the adoptions he was promoting would not lead to citizenship. People paid between $550 and $10,000 to participate. Helaman was convicted and sentenced to 20 years in prison, but now argues the law used to convict him was so broad that it violates his free speech rights. I'm Norman Hall.
This is AP News.
Girls and boys in poverty around the world are dreaming of a better life, filled with dance, art, music, and knowledge. They dream of a brighter future with enough nutritious food to eat, a chance to learn and grow, to get an education, escape poverty, and do incredible things. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, such dreams are coming true. Together, we give children a chance to set their sights high and succeed in school and in life by ensuring that they have access to healthcare, education, life skills, and so much more so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves. Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today. Together, we can help end poverty for good.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
I feel like all the women we have on our show, like our co-hosts, always get too famous for us. And then
I would just like to think that we are fertile ground from which they can blossom. We are the manure from which they spring.
The manure from which they spring. I was going to say holding fort, but I think your metaphor is way better.
Up North News Radio with Pat Krylo airs at its new time from 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays across Civic Media.
It's Friday.
Oh, it is Friday.
It was a short week, and it still feels like it was a long week. And we did it.
We did. Well, we're almost
it.
We almost did it.
We're still going to get through today. But we did it. We lived to tell about it. We're having fun.
Yeah. All kinds of fun things planned for today.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Right here on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
grew up hearing that women are bad with money, but I pay bills and take care of my family, so I'm pretty good with money. And now I'm taking control of my financial future by saving for retirement. Jumpstart your retirement savings at WeSaySaveIt.org. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. The man convicted for shooting and wounding three police officers in Wauwatosa last year is sentenced to 40 years in prison. Kenneth Burney opened fire on the officers as they moved in to arrest him at a hotel about a year ago. Burney was remorseful at his sentencing yesterday, saying he's made a lot of terrible mistakes. Two Wisconsin Republicans crossed party lines to vote for the Respect for Marriage Act. The bill codifies interracial and same-sex marriage rights. Brian Stile and Mike Gallagher voted yes after amendments were added to address religious concerns and ban polygamy. A spokesperson for Stile says the bill maintains the status quo on marriage. In sports, Badger volleyball beat Penn State in a five-set tournament thriller last night. They advance to play Pitt tomorrow night. The Bucks are at Dallas tonight. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, interesting story coming out of Florida. And yes, lots of fun and entertainment coming out of Florida. But this Kathy RU, she was, you may have heard of her as the Liberal Sherpa on the F channel. Evidently, the Liberal Sherpa. She's been arrested in Miami, accused of kidnapping and fleecing, financially exploiting was the term, her elderly mother. They say she got off with about $224,000 out of her 88-year-old mother's finances and other proceeds from a reverse mortgage on her mother's house, basically robbing mom blind. I guess needed the money because no longer the Liberal Sherpa. Yeah, good conservative family values. Anyway, our quote of the day comes from, well, Kyrsten Sinema, who said of, you may remember Trader Joe Lieberman when he left the Democratic Party back in 2003. She was quoted in Mother Jones saying, he's a shame to Democrats. I don't even know why he's running. He seems to want to get Republicans voting for him. What kind of strategy is that? And Kyrsten, what kind of strategy is that? Because it seems to be what you're doing. And here to share some thoughts on, well, maybe the new Liberal Sherpa. Who knows? Over at the F channel, I've asked our good friend David Yankovich to come talk with us. David is a senior Democratic strategist, also the digital guru. David, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick. Thanks for having me again.
So what do you think of Senator Dipsy Doo and her big attention getter today?
Oh, I called that a long time ago. I think I called it on your show a long time ago. I mean, she has no base. No one's going to want to be with her. You know, how is she going to run for re-election next year or next cycle here without her own base? She, you know, she made her bed and then she had to do what she did there. Yeah, I mean, I saw this coming, and I honestly, you know, if Manchin wasn't such a party guy, I would think that he would do the same thing. But I'm kind of torn on that one. But I 100% knew she was going to roll this way.
So this now means basically Manchin is back being a thorn in the side then.
Well, she's going to be too. You know, I mean, she's going to have her, I mean, in her mind, you know, I have this independent power play position now. You know, I can go to both ends. And, you know, so she's thinking that she's kind of warping herself kind of in the middle, and that's like her best shot at reelection, you know, in doing that. But yeah, it's we're going to see. It's going to, I mean, this whole next cycle is going to be insane. I mean, with everything that's about to come out. So it's, yeah, I mean, she's probably not even going to be the top story in any of it compared to everything else that's coming.
Now, has she made herself irrelevant at this point? I mean, yeah, because now you assume she's going to be on the other side on virtually every issue, right?
Well, traditionally, she's actually voted, what is it, 90% with Joe Biden? You know, she's actually been, for the majority of the votes that that she's cast, has been for the Democrats, except for the stuff that's really, really angered us, the big stuff, that's when she hasn't. It's going to be interesting now that she's not going to be, she's going to feel a lot more emboldened, you know, to kind of go off and do whatever. And she thinks that, I mean, she's going to have to pick up Republicans in her state to win. She's not going to be able to pick up Democrats, and she has to know that. Any consultant within, you know, with worth their salt would tell her that. Like, you know, you consider half the base gone. So now how are you going to win? Now you have to go a lot more hard. You have to go a lot more red. So I think that we're probably going to see that voting record that she has start going down now a little bit more. But that's just my guess.
No, that's where my mind was going, which is why I asked the question. I got to assume she's got to make a rightward turn if she's going to try and appeal to the moderate right-wing vote and try and, you know, hope there's a conservative left. I mean, Arizona's not Connecticut. She's not Joe Lieberman. I don't see this as a winning strategy.
Can't win without your base. Like, yeah, that's just it. I mean, so she's got to have a new base. And who's her base going to be? The Democrats, you know, and the official party has denounced her. You know, I mean, there's funding already. Whoever's going to, I mean, everybody is licking their chops at a primary against her, you know, and everything else. And now that she's independent, I mean, she really doesn't have a base either way. She also doesn't have the protection of the Democratic Party trying to save a Senate seat and doing that either. It's going to be really interesting. I don't even know if she makes it out of the primary. I really don't. Like, and she's going to, that's why she's going to stay independent. Like, because generally in this scenario, what they do is they go, and like Charlie Crist did, I'm Republican. Now I'm independent. I'm going to do that for a year. Now I'm Democrat. With her here, I don't know if she can do that. So, it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, I don't see her flip it over to being a Republican because the Republicans are crazy. They're not going to take her. Or crazier. They're not going to take her on.
I think that they take her on or take her in the party.
To put her up for election. I don't see them doing that because I think they're further to the extreme than she is.
Oh yeah. So, well, I can see your point there, but also they have a sitting Senate seat. Mitch McConnell is, you know, pretty savvy. Strategically. So,
well, I'm talking about in the election when in 2024 when she's up for re-election. I don't see Republicans taking her under their wing.
I see Mitch McConnell taking him under his wing.
Well, right now, because they want to flip the Senate to his favor. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're going to see.
Yeah, we'll see how it's going to be an interesting year, isn't it? I mean, January 3rd, I've got marked on the calendar, and everyone should, because we're going to find out what happens in the House on that day, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, that's another one. And I keep telling everybody, like, we're going to see the true state of the Republican Party, you know, on that day. Like, how far have they gone? How crazy are they? You know, is Jim Jordan going to be a speaker? You know, like, what's going to happen with McCarthy here? So, yeah, it's going to be a pie fight. But it's really going to give us a good barometer of where they are internally.
Yeah, and I mean, if we had a functional system, you know, there would be somebody who would rise up and try and find some middle ground. But I think McCarthy's going to sell his soul to crazy to get the position he wants. And I want it for him. I really do. I want him to be speaker because I want him to get everything he deserves.
That's the thing is, you know, you see it sometimes in politics. Like, there are some people that, like, you look at them and you go, my God, like, they got it. And sometimes you look at them and you're like, that's a stupid person. You know, McCarthy is a stupid person. And I hate saying this, and everybody knows probably, especially for this show, but, you know, Paul Ryan was not a stupid person.
No.
You know, he was pretty damn savvy. There's a reason why, you know, he had to tell McCarthy, like, this doesn't leave this room and everything else. But it's, you know, every now and again, like you, Sarah Palin, you know, this is a stupid person. You know, McCarthy's just not a smart guy. He's not a strategically smart guy. And, you know, I mean, he's going to be, even if he wins, even if he squeaks through, he's going to be completely, you know, shackled by the extremists in his party.
Yep. He's going to get steamrolled by the Greens and the Boberts and the Jordans. He's going to get steamrolled.
The exact same thing that happened to Paul Ryan. Exact same thing. Well, it's a million times worse now because they're crazier. You know, I mean, you had the Tea Party back then and you had Paul Ryan and, you know, and everything and the stabilizing force and whatever. And he got steamrolled and he actually had a brain in his head.
Like, yeah, he got out. Yeah, this is why I say I want McCarthy to get what he wants, because I think he'll get what he deserves.
I think that for me having to strategize against somebody, I prefer McCarthy.
No, this is where the country's fortunate, because the right has really put up some people who are not the brightest bulbs in the box. Trump, definitely not the brightest bulb in the box. McCarthy, certainly not. The rest of them, because look, if they were functional, they could do real damage.
Yeah.
Even more than they've done. Look, they've done a lot of damage, but they could do, you know, damage and have people go, oh, yeah, that's not a bad idea. Brian Kemp scares me.
Yeah, and DeSantis should scare you. Like, I'm down in Florida right now. You're not seeing a lot of Trump flags anymore. You're seeing DeSantis bumper stickers and that stuff. You're going to be here in a few weeks. You'll see it.
I'm going to try to ignore that.
Yeah, and it's, you know, but business loves him because he kept it open during COVID. You know, but I mean, you brought up a really good point, and this has been bothering me for a long time. And Rick, you know me, like, you know me on a personal level. I try not to criticize the Democratic Party. I try not to criticize the leadership, and I really, really, really try to pull back and give them the benefit of the doubt for how hard things have to be on them right now. But I mean, our lives and our experiences, like, are really, like, limited only to our comfort levels. And I mean, people only put up with what they allow. And, like, right now, half the country has shown, and, like, this is what we're talking about, like, half the country has shown that they're completely comfortable with what's going on with the MAGA chaos and the extremism and hate and everything else, election after election after election. Like, we're doing 50%, 50%, 51%. Like, we're, this country is completely split in half. And I'm seeing the Democrats out here, and we're taking a victory lap after the midterm. It's like, oh, you know, we didn't get beat as bad as we thought we were. We lost the House a little bit, but we saved the Senate, you know. And I'm looking at this, and it's like, and I'm not a doom and gloom guy either, you know, but I'm looking at this strategically, and I'm looking at this clearly. We have a major problem if, like, you have a guy like Herschel Walker running for U.S. Senate, and he doesn't get beat by 80 or 90 points.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, the fact that, like, we're dancing up and down, that we, like, squeaked one out in Georgia, you know, which I'm happy too. I really am. But, like, we have a bigger problem at hand here. And then, you know, we're, like, and you can speak to this, you know, we've walked away from talk radio. You know, there's no funding coming for that. There's no surrogacy list. There's none of that stuff unless, you know, we find it on our own. You know, there's TV. We walked away from TV. We're not, you know, while we're trying to get them to book us on interviews, like, Republicans are buying TV stations and channels, you know, and on social media, we've walked away from it. And, you know, we're not doing everything that we need to. And then, you know, while we're doing all this victory lap, everybody's like, but how do we communicate? Why can't we get our message out to the base? Like, it's just,
you have no idea how many times I've given that speech to crowds and going, you know, this is what we're doing here, and this is what we're trying to do, and, you know, this is why we need, you know, support to do this, that, and the other thing. And invariably, at the end of the speech, you have someone who comes up to me, if we could only get our message out. And I just want to slap them, because I've just said, I just told you how to do it, and now you're coming to me asking me, you know, if we just could do that. I've been there, and it's infuriating.
Oh, I mean, my dad, you know, he made $55,000 a year, and he worked in a you know, warehouse. And he was a simple guy. He wasn't even a super political guy, but if he really was pissed off enough or whatever, he would go and vote. And, you know, he would wake up in the morning, he would check his email, and he would get, like, those email spam chains, you know, about Obama's a Muslim and, yep, like, that kind of stuff. He goes and turns on the TV at Fox. But every single day when he drove to work, it was WNIR in Akron, Ohio, driving and listening to the talk radio on the Republican side of it every single day. And this is happening all throughout the country. And I'm preaching to the choir to you, Rick, because I'm really talking to the listeners here about this, you know. But, like, we aren't there at all. Like, Rick's, like, the last station of talk radio that's doing this kind of stuff. And, like, that's just one piece of the communication problem. But then TV, we're not doing this right either. We're throwing all of our TV, like, our advertising and fundraising and everything into a dying giant here. And then, like, we're hoping that the newspapers and the media covers us the way that we hope they will, even though they're being bought by Republicans. And, like, and then, like, social media, they think, is a fad and it's going to be gone in 5 years. And they told me that. I talked to a guy who just ran for governor a couple years back, and he didn't know what a meme was. So, like, you know, we have no idea how to communicate as a party anymore. And, you know, so kind of coming onto the show, kind of, you know, as we're talking about this stuff, like, that was what was going through my head as I was getting on, as I'm looking at this and I'm looking at all the glad handing and celebrating and back clapping that everybody's doing. And I'm just like, we're in the end game now and we have a lot of work to do and we're not there yet. We're not, you know, like, yes, we salvaged something, but that's not enough if we want to win this whole thing.
No, we salvaged it, and like it or not, and you can disagree with you if you have to, but if it's not for Roe, the Democrats take the beating that they were going to get. Had it not been for the Supreme Court overturning that and angering women to get out and vote, I see this being the bloodbath, the red wave that conservatives were hoping and dreaming of.
I think that's true, and I think also they had a lot of candidates that are unelectable. And, you know, I think that those two mixed together. And on top of that, I will give the kids credit, too. The kids showed up in this election a lot more than they usually do.
Yeah, but ultimately it came down to that issue. Yeah, and if you don't have that issue, we've got a Senator Herschel Walker. We've got a Senator Mehmet Oz to join, you know, Dr. J.D. Vance. We've got a crazy Senate. Without that issue, I think it would have been a sweep.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, that was the thing I think that jolted the Democrats to wake or to, you know, alive again or to wake up. Because, I mean, remember, like, you and I were talking about this, and, you know, I was like, we're in trouble here. Like, I mean, you know, back in, 2010, Obama lost 63 seats in the House, and he had a 10% higher approval rating than President Biden did at that election. I mean, we definitely salvaged a lot. I mean, there's definitely a lot to celebrate, too. I'm not knocking that piece of it, but, you know, if we wouldn't have that issue, here's the thing that drives me nuts is, like, as a party right now, we are driving the vehicle. Like, President Biden is only president because Donald Trump was running against him. Like, he would have never been, I mean, the campaign that he ran and, you know, when he got elected and everything else was atrocious. and everybody else out there thinks that this is such a big thing. You know, that, you know, we won and we're so great at this. No, the country is fed up with the other guy. And that's what just happened in the midterms here. Like, the party didn't salvage this. The people salvaged it. The resistance out there did. You know, like, we can't celebrate what we're not doing.
No, good point. Like, should Joe Biden run in 2024? I know they're deciding. They're trying to figure out what they're going to do. Should he run in 2024?
That's a tough one. If he was younger, and I'm just going to say what everybody's thinking. If he was younger, he would be up there on Mount Rushmore with what he's done in his first.
Absolutely.
Like, I mean, and that's the thing. So when I look at this and I think about the age and I think about having to do the grind of being not just being president, but being a candidate again, you know, it's a hard thing. And I wouldn't want that for somebody that I'm close with. So I'm kind of hoping that he makes the decision that's the best for him in this. But for me and for, you know, I think what's going to be better for the country, you know, who else is there right now?
No, you know, I mean, my choices, and I've said this a number of times, I'd like Sherrod Brown and Bob Casey or Sherrod Brown and Doug Jones or Sherrod Brown and somebody else. You know, give me somebody who can go in and talk to rural working class folks and get them around on the issues that I think are important. And I think Sherrod Brown does that. I think Bob Casey does a good job. I you know, we interviewed Doug Jones yesterday. I thought he did a great job. I think there's an opportunity to you know, kind of maybe capture some of those rural communities that have been left behind. Because, look, they're hurting. They were the one thing that Trump did highlight is that these communities are struggling. And they're looking for help. And I think Biden's got a good record. I think the Democrats are doing the right thing, especially over these next 2 years as the investments start rolling out, as we expand broadband access, as we rebuild our infrastructure. That's gonna come into rural communities, too. And I think there's an opportunity there.
I totally agree. I guess the answer to your question for me on this is, does Biden run big guns? The last election he's ever going to be in at the end of his political career, you know, does he go big? Does he run big guns? If he wins, what does he do with those 4 years? I haven't heard that argument yet. You know, like, what is it? And I mean, from all intents and purposes, from what I see from the White House and you know, from, you know, the comm standpoint and everything, it's completely stale. You know, so is he going to shake things up and is he going to run big guns and is he going to, you know, and that doesn't, for all the people that listen in the establishment, that doesn't mean going all the way far to the left and, you know, screaming socialism in a microphone. When I say going big guns, it means going out there and being authentic and being wild and being brave and, you know, talking about the issues people are afraid to talk about. If this is truly his, you know, last election, you know, if he's going to do this, make it worth it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, don't do it. Don't go up there and be, you know, lethargic and everything else. Like, go up there and, like, stand for something and end your political career with something to really hang your hat on.
Yeah, that's what I would say. I got to tell you, I think he really screwed up last week with the railroad situation. I don't know who was advising him. I think it was a bad choice of what they did. But this is one of those things where, again, if you're going to be the most pro-union president in the history of the country, You need to do a better job than what they did. And I think Democrats should have ran one bill. They should have made Republicans vote sick days down. And then we should have had a call for a national movement to get every worker sick time, to make sure everyone has that security. There were, in my view, there was a way to stave off a strike while still saying we're building and we're trying to bring people together. I think that was a missed opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, I can't agree with everything that he does. And I mean, in a situation like this, I just don't understand why we don't hear more from people like you, you know, like when we're in these conversations and that stuff. It's just the same thing with, like, I mean, one of my big political strategies that I keep trying to tell the party to do is bring unions back to help us organize on the ground. There's no one better out there in the world than union organizers. And, you know, so, like, I feel like the party has walked away, not walked away from it, because they're still for the American worker, but they've walked away from, like, the organizations as much of, like, you know, having that type of relationship like we used to have. And that's a big problem that we have in the party, too. You know, that's the reason why unions endorse Democrats, but there are people, the laborers, a majority of them, vote Republican. And, you know, we have to be there for that. And it's stuff like this, like you're talking about here, where it hurts us, you know, with having these types of conversations and doing it.
You listen to the Rick Smith Show with David Yankovic, Democratic strategist and multimedia guru. I wanted to get your thoughts on moving the first primary to South Carolina. Is this a good idea, you think?
You know, I'm kind of, I have the unpopular opinion because I'm like a history buff and, you know, and everything else. So for me, like I would keep everything the same and I would never move it around for that because it's just, but like, it makes sense to me with the changing electorate and, you know, what we need our focuses to be and where we need them to be, like having a Southern strategy, you know, going into these races is not a bad thing, considering we haven't had a Southern strategy in our party since Bill Clinton was elected.
No, I see. So, but why South Carolina? You're never going to win South Carolina. Georgia, I get. Georgia's, you know, changing demographically. I think the DNC convention should be in Atlanta. I think we should be going all in with a Southern strategy to bring working people around and Democratic voters. But why South Carolina?
Well, wish I had an answer for that. But
no, I mean, it just seems like there's no chance of winning South Carolina.
You know, I don't agree with that.
There's no chance. Right now, there is no chance of winning South Carolina.
I think if we have the right candidate with the right message and they speak to the audiences out there, we can win that seat or we can win that state. I do. I think it's possible. Currently, right now, I don't have the candidate. You know, so no, we can't. But I do think that state is winnable, especially with the African American population, you know, getting, you know, growing and getting stronger there. And also, you know, Georgia now, it's been two elections in a row. It's still a purple state, but it's gone blue. You know, starting to work around the edges of, you know, Georgia and other states there, you know, and doing it is how you start a movement. So I'm not completely against the South Carolina idea. I'm with you. I think that maybe it should have been Georgia, you know, or it should have been
North Carolina
in North Carolina or, you know, one of those. But, you know, but I do see part of the strategy of what they're thinking, at least this time.
All righty. Lastly, I want to get your thoughts on Rona McDaniel. Evidently, she's going to be the RNC chair. I got to tell you, I was pulling for the pillow guy.
You know, the thing is for me, it's like, it's just, it's a coin flip of crazy, you know? So, like, I mean, she's not strategically intelligent, and my pillow guy obviously isn't either. So, I mean, it's two sides of the same coin for me. It's, you know, she's going to say whatever they want her to say, and so will he, you know, it's just.
Yeah, see, I disagree with that. I think he'd have gone full on berserko. I think it'd have been much more entertaining. It would have gotten us a third ring for the circus.
Well, here's my thing that I've learned over the years: the circus and what everybody's watching isn't where everything's happening. So, you know, if you have him screaming into a microphone and doing whatever, everybody's always paying attention to that and doing it, but then they're not paying attention to the rest of the stuff that's happening.
Yeah, no, good
you
point.
Know, so you get her in there, you know. She's not going to be screaming into the microphone. She's going to be, you know, basically out in the open doing what she's doing. So,
there you go. Good stuff.
Yep.
As always, David, I appreciate the time. Fabulous stuff. Look forward to having you back again in the new year. Hope you have a great holiday, you and your family. Good stuff, man.
All right. You as well, Rick. Have a good one. Talk care. Hi.
Will do. Thanks so much, our good friend David.
The Shah 101 FM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
Join Max Inc. Radio this New Year's Eve as we present live at thespaceship.tv. Max Inc. Radio will broadcast live from the spaceship.tv studios 6 p.m. to midnight, plus live performances from the Civil Engineers. Linda and the Zeros. Porky's Groove Machine.
The Spice Girls. Muy caliente.
Live streaming video at thespaceship.tv and live on this Civic Media station. Let's party New Year's Eve starting at 6 p.m. live from thespaceship.tv. Happy New Year's from Civic Media and Max Inc. Radio. We are local music.
I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News. On an earlier edition, we talked to three women, med students, about whether they're going to stay in Wisconsin to practice medicine.
All this Roe v. Wade stuff, and now OBGYN's hands are so tied. I don't want to go through 12 years of training to have some person that didn't do training tell me how to do my job.
It is not a binary choice. You're for or against abortion. It is a healthcare decision. We all have those stories, and people want to hear them.
Don't miss the real stories here on Up North News.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which was audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP. We're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. Once in a while, Gene of Eau Claire.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
Once in a while, Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
Adoption of teens from foster care is a topic not enough people know about, and we're here to change that. I'm April Dinwiddie, host of the new podcast, Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Each episode brings you compelling real-life adoption stories told by the families that live them, with commentary from experts. Visit adoptuskids.org/podcast or subscribe to Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Children and Families and the Ad Council.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matinee with your headlines. The number of flu cases in Wisconsin and across the country are spiking. State data shows the number of influenza-like infections took off more than a month earlier than the previous 4 years and has already reached or surpassed peak activity level of 3 of those years. On Monday, the CDC's director, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, announced this year's vaccine is a very good match for the flu strains currently in circulation. The Wisconsin Department of Health Services data says less than 1 in 3 Wisconsinites have gotten a flu shot as of Thursday. An updated COVID booster shot, which protects against the original strain and the more contagious Omicron variant, is still available to people regardless of insurance. As of Wednesday, 37.7% of Wisconsinites had gotten that additional booster. You're listening to The Shah, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, 70-year-old Senator John Hickenlooper, Democrat from Colorado, he and his wife Robin Pringle Hickenlooper, they have a brand new baby boy. The baby was born via surrogate on Thursday. Hickenlooper said it's been a long journey, one that many parents understand. It took a combination of love, miracles, and determination. But here we are cuddling this amazing little baby boy, and good for them. 70 years old, I don't know that I want to be changing diapers at 70. But good on him. Look, I'm sure he's wealthy enough. There'll be nannies to do that kind of stuff. But 70, wow, good for him. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day, our good friend, former Ohio Congressman and political analyst Bob Ney. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks, wow.
70.
My great-grandmother was 54 when she had her last child, the ninth one. And, yeah, she was 54,
yeah.
And that was 98 years ago.
70. So,
and my great-grandfather was like, I think he was like 75 or something. It was just something
wow.
out there.
Yeah, well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting stuff.
I barely made it having one a kid at 29.
Yeah, yeah. I remember when we brought our first child home, and we were looking at each other going, now what? I can't imagine being 70.
Oh, my.
But good on them. Good on them.
Yeah, good for them.
Wanted to get your thoughts on Senator Dipsy Doo's decision today to become an independent.
Well, this is quite interesting. This, of course, stops technically a primary. There could be a primary, but maybe that's part of her decision, you know, but not of avoiding a primary. But then, now under Arizona law, would she? Yeah, she could be part of a three-way race, correct?
I think so. I don't know if they have closed primaries or not, though.
You have the D, the R, and then you would have her. So I mean, that's a. Probably a strategy right there. That's number one. I found the most interesting thing about it, it surprised me she's actually doing it, is that she's not going to caucus with the Democrats. I mean, what's the key there of not caucusing? Bernie Sanders is an independent. Angus is an independent. They caucus with the Democrats. So she won't be caucusing with either political party. The caucus is, for the listeners, you know, that don't know, that's the fun part.
Yeah.
That's where you shut the door and say all kinds of things to each other. You know, the real stuff spills out.
Bob, I don't think she wants to be behind that door.
She didn't go much anyway.
I know, that's the report, but I don't think she wants to be there now.
Okay, all right.
Do you? I mean, would if you know, if you're being viewed as the one who's, you know, being the fly in the ointment, do you want to take that beating that you're going to get behind the door?
Well, Manchin did.
I think Manchin's a different kind of character. I just think she's way off on the fringe, man. And we'll see. We'll see how this plays out.
Now, unlike Manchin, Manchin would tell. I mean, let's give him credit for this. He warned Schumer way early on. Warned Senator Schumer, I'm not with the Build Back Better America, I've got a problem, you know, and they kind of, okay, well, we'll get around it. He warned them. She doesn't do a lot of warning. She holds the cards close to the vest. She's famous for it.
Yeah. She's going to be famous for being a one-term senator, too, I think.
Well, the other thing she does is she really, you know, she takes it back to, you know, the point where she almost gives the, I don't think she'll do this. That's why Senator Schumer may have to watch. She almost gives the Democrats a position to be in a split 50-50 government again, where in order to constitute, they are at the mercy of, you know, some acquisition to Republicans. But I don't think she will do that. I think she will go along with the rules process, I would assume, with the Democrats.
Now, I assume she's going to as well for the short period until the money starts rolling in. Now, for me, you know, I call her Senator Dipsy Doo for a reason. I'm sure you remember the that little dance she did when she voted down the minimum wage increase.
Oh,
when she did the thumbs down, she tried to do the John McCain thumbs down, but she tried to do a little. I don't know. It was a curtsy. I don't know. It was a little dance. I'm not quite sure what she was doing in the little skirt and the weird outfit, but you know, she gave the thumbs down on a minimum wage increase. So again, that's the reason I call her Senator Dipsy Doo, because she was doing her little dance.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she does technically complicate the control factor for the Democrats technically. If this gets to the point where, you know, she gets angry or they can't
get enough attention
the way they want, it could be a real problem. I mean, it surprised me this morning that she did it.
Yeah, but again, someone needs attention. Someone must not. Never mind. I'm not going there. I'm not going to say she wasn't breastfed. I'm not going to say it. Someone didn't get enough attention as a child. I want to move on. Jim Jordan appointed chairman of the House Committee on the Judiciary. What are we expecting with that?
Well, this should be no holds barred. I mean, I think we all know he of course, is a Ohio Republican. And so I would say that everybody should be prepared that, as you know, he doesn't wear his suit coat. You know, he takes that off. He's always kind of ready for a fight, should we say. But he will definitely be way to the right with that committee.
January the 3rd, I've got circled on my calendar, going to be an interesting day because that's the day that we're going to find out who is going to be the speaker. And are you laying bets on if McCarthy gets what he deserves?
He'll be the speaker. If they do not make him the speaker, they will have chaos, the likes of which they haven't seen for a long time, because it then opens up. It's not a controlled situation where you have somebody else that comes up and has got the votes. If they do not take him, not only will it be chaos because of how many people then would get into the fray, but it'd be chaos because, you know, Marjorie Taylor Three Names, for example, I use that, what you say all the time, Marjorie Taylor Three Names will have a field day. McCarthy is the only thing, think about this for a second, standing between Marjorie Taylor Three Names and some other fringe candidate against McCarthy that would possibly become the speaker. So McCarthy wins it. Now, will he remain? Will he get, you know, Boehnert, you know, John Boehner? We know what happened to him. That's possible. Now, with Jim Jordan, by the way, you're going to have Investigation City. Because one thing that the Republicans should avoid, and they'll say, well, eye for eye, investigation for investigation, but they should avoid it. They should go into substantive policy. And if they want to have a controlled look at something, Hunter's laptop or whatever they're going to do, a controlled look at it. When I say controlled, instead of everybody's ego getting in the way and making multiple committees and having investigations everywhere, you know, a la Benghazi, they should go after public policy. But Jordan will get press attention. He will feed into it, and that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think we know that's where it's going to go, because I don't think they have policy that they really want to push. I mean, honestly, you're usually straight down the middle of the road. Is there policy on the Republican side that they want to move? Is there an agenda there?
Well, this is the problem. If we look at the midterms, which they should have by all rights, as you know and I know and everybody that follows politics know, they should have gained a lot more seats. But the only policy that came up for election was Trump, Mar-a-Lago. Are you with Trump? Are you against Trump? Here's Trump candidates. Are you a Trump candidate or not? You know, was it an insurrection or not? Was the election stolen or not? That was the public policy, which is not public policy.
Yeah, and let's not forget Roe.
The opportunity. Well, they missed the opportunity to get a mantra where they could have, you know, hit at 1, 2, 3, 4. Here's how they're going to solve inflation. Here's how they're going to solve, you know, the gasoline crisis. Here's how they're going to solve balancing the nation's budget, et cetera. None of that happened.
Yeah.
Now, if they could get their act together and make that happen, but again, the attention is going to be shown to Jordan, the amount of grief that probably every vote the new speaker is going to have is going to waylay them, and then wait and throw in a little bit of Trump.
A little bit of Trump.
John Bolton running against Trump.
but Trump truthed out today over on Truth Social that Jewish leaders forgot that I was the best, by far, president for Israel. They should be ashamed of themselves, he truthed. This lack of loyalty to their greatest friend and allies is why large numbers in Congress and so many others have stopped giving support to Israel. Does he not realize that they're probably looking at him and going, you had dinner with two anti-Semitic Holocaust deniers. I don't know that you can be lecturing about loyalty.
Right. He had dinner with Holocaust deniers, number one. Number two, Trump did things that Netanyahu didn't even ask him to do. He did. I mean, Netanyahu had to have been in Jerusalem, turning to his staff, going, "Did we ask him to do that? Did we ask him to actually move that embassy? Or no? You know, Mr. Prime Minister, he just decided to do it. He did everything. Then he got angry at Netanyahu because he thought Netanyahu didn't do enough in his election. And they also did everything that MBS wanted done, yeah. Mohammed bin Salman.
Let me ask you about that, because, you know, we're evidently not holding them liable for that.
For the
killing. I guess we've kind of dropped that as the administration, I guess, has kind of walked away from it.
Well, they did. They officially went in to say, you know, through the federal court, because of this potential suit, that he has immunity because Mohammed bin Salman now made himself prime minister of a non-existent government in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. There are 5,000 members of the Saudi royal family. That's the government, but he made himself the prime minister. So now he's exempt. Now, the Biden administration had no choice in doing it. I mean, after all, look, I was against the president's trip. When it got announced he was going to Saudi Arabia, I publicly, on all the radio stations I do, I publicly said, this is wrong, bad trip. He fist bumps and Mohammed bin Salman slaps him is what he does,
yeah.
You know, with the whole gasoline and oil and everything afterwards. But to defend the administration for a second, they had legally no choice. But I'll tell you what I think they should have done. Don't make a statement.
Yeah.
Just don't even make a statement. Let the court decide. Don't be part of the official court process with that guy.
No, I'm right there with you. I just think that there's some messaging problems going on right now, which, you know, they better straighten out. If Biden's going to run for re-election, which I guess I'm hearing undercurrent that he's going to be, he's planning on running in 2024, they better get this messaging down.
Well, he's planning on running, and also those within the Democratic side that kind of think that they're going to go after him, don't do it. If he runs, he's the nominee. You stick by him and you go with it. But the messaging is a problem that they have. And, you know, they've had that problem, and they need to obviously sharpen the tools in the toolbox when it comes to the campaign process.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting year. Going to be sure. Most certainly an interesting year. But, Bob, as always, appreciate the time. Good stuff, my friend.
Thank you.
Look forward to talking to you again soon. Again, yeah, I'm just sharpen it up a little bit. Sharpen it up, guys. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people from the talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1869. That was the day a new union named the Noble and Holy Order of the Knights of Labor was founded. It started in Philadelphia as a secret society of tailors, but soon the Knights expanded to workers in other trades. The Knights' unions were vertically organized. This meant each union included all workers in a given industry, regardless of craft. This was a different philosophy from most unionism of the time, which focused on craft-based organizing. The Knights also accepted workers of all skill levels, as well as women. African Americans were also accepted after 1883, although often in segregated locals. The most well-known Knights leader, Terence Powderly, took office in 1879. By 1886, the group had grown to more than 700,000 members. The Knights championed the cause of the 8-hour day. While the union supported boycotts and arbitration, it remained very wary of strikes as a tactic. The Knights did support the Chicago general strike for the 8-hour day that started on May 1, 1886. After the bomb incident at the rally in Haymarket Square, the Knights were unfairly singled out for blame. Due to the backlash over Haymarket, the Knights' membership suddenly and dramatically declined. The widespread repression of labor unions in the 1880s led to the union's demise. The newly emerging American Federation of Labor replaced the Knights of Labor at the head of the labor union movement. The AFL focused on organizing by craft as opposed to industry. But the Knights of Labor had helped to show that inclusive unionism was possible.
Labor must reap what labor does sow. Labor must reap what labor does
sow. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. So I saw this story about an email sent out by Tim Scott that, again, you know, this kind of underhanded fundraising stuff is just, it's disgraceful what people will do to get into your pocket. But evidently, Tim Scott, the senator from South Carolina, in December is sending out an email that reads, emergency notice. Your heat will be turned off. Emergency notice. And you have to go in through it and you look at it and it says your heat's going to be turned off. And only after you open the email, it becomes clear that it's not really an emergency. It's not an overheating bill. It's none of that stuff. It's a fundraising request. And you go, how much of a dirtbag do you have to be to do that? Yeah, but again, no level too low. No level too low. Now, fun with Florida. We're going to be heading to Florida in a couple of weeks. Actually, the end of next week. Wow. It's sneaking up. We take our two-week vacation at the end of the year. So the last 2 weeks of the year, we're going to be off. We're going to be replaying the Working Class Heroes radio tour. If you missed any portion of those 2 weeks while we were on the road in October into November, we will be replaying that for your entertainment, for your enjoyment, and maybe see where we were, during the run-up to the election, but heading to Florida. And this is one of those things where you go, Florida, crazy place, crazy governor. Now, you remember when they put out the election police, the election fraud police, and they arrested a bunch of people? Well, another case, a third case has fallen apart as the courts are going, no, this ain't working. No evidence here. Another case, because they don't want to lose again in court. So this got tossed out as well. Another election fraud case falls apart because it's just not there. I know the narrative. I get it. Also, one of DeSantis's big donors, evidently dead in his car on Thursday. I'm assuming, possibly. It didn't say, but there's part of me goes. Maybe did himself in. But according to the sheriff's department, the investigation is ongoing and will continue till it's complete. Now, there are some reports of possibly sexual misconduct being investigated, some stuff. Now, this guy, a military contractor, big donor to Republican campaigns and political contributions, some $140,000. He has spent some $50,000 of it went to committees aligned with DeSantis. Now, if I were on the right, if this was a right wing radio program, I would spin this into DeSantis put on his wetsuit and went out and murdered this guy in the middle of the night because and then we would just make up some stuff to go along with it. Reality is what it is. Guy's dead. There's an investigation. Some ties to DeSantis. There's the story. I go back to another bit of Florida lore. Because again, they keep telling us every state should be like Florida with its fraud, waste, and abuse. A Republican lawmaker, you remember the guy who authored the Don't Say Gay bill? Well, he's resigned. Federal fraud charges. Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing how they how that happens. It's amazing how they line their pockets. And for me, I keep coming back to, this is why we've got to stop putting our faith in these people, and why we need working class voices in there to be fighting for, you know, we need to be better voters. Because these are the people who end up getting in there pushing this kind of nonsense. You know, this whole culture war stuff is meant to keep us stupid and funding them. And this is what they do. They line their pockets. It's not about any weird belief structure. They want to believe, they want us to believe they believe, but it's all about the money. And that's the part that just infuriates me. It really just is that simple. Also, want to get into, evidently the Keystone Pipeline is shut down. Huh, who knew? And, you know, here's the thing. I was told Joe Biden shut it down. No, it turns out the Keystone Pipeline was shut down Thursday because it spilled about 14,000 barrels of oil into a creek in Kansas. I know, but Rick, I thought Joe Biden shut down the Keystone Pipeline. No, the Keystone Pipeline was taking the oil from Canada down to the Gulf of Mexico, or to the Texas Gulf Coast, and of course being shipped out into the international market to be refined somewhere else. That is happening. Trust me, the oil will flow. It's just not the XL portion of it that was going to bring the really nasty stuff in. But again, 14,000 barrels. I don't know. That sounds like kind of a lot, especially when you're talking about people's drinking water. Maybe we should be doing something to get off the juice. Just a thought. And finally, I had to get to this one. The Juul people, you know, the people who make the vape stuff, they've agreed to pay $1.2 billion in a youth vaping settlement. Evidently, there have been about 10,000 lawsuits across the country targeting the e-cigarette maker as a major cause of the U.S. youth vaping epidemic. And I remember we were told this is safer than smoking, so everyone was pushing towards that. It was going in that direction. Now they're going to be able to stave off bankruptcy because the $1.2 billion isn't enough to put them under. But they did have to lay off a bunch of their workers and get some money from a rich guy to keep them afloat because, you know, we've got to do the vape thing. And I'm not entirely against it, if that's what you're going to do. I know people who smoke and they've moved to this, and it's a different hazard, but probably not going to destroy your lungs as much. That's your choice. The kid thing, I'm struggling with. I mean, when you have bubblegum flavors, yeah, who do you think you're marketing to? Anyway, what a week this has been. It's good to be back in the studio. Next week on the program, we're going to work our way into the holiday season we're going to be talking about what's coming up in the new year, start making some early predictions, maybe looking back on the year that was. And this was really an incredible year for us here at the program. And I want to thank everyone, all of our listeners, for people who have chimed in, people who have emailed, shared their thoughts, their hopes, their dreams, all of that stuff. You know, just appreciate the help and the thoughts. Next year is going to be even better and bigger. Lots of fights going on, lots of things going on. We will be taking off the last 2 weeks of the year for the big holiday. We do it every year. It's kind of the family vacation, kind of recharge, re-energize, kind of get to meet the kids again, that kind of stuff. Get to say hello to my wife because I work too much. So that's what we do. And we're going to DeSantis land, which should be entertaining in and of itself. I'm looking forward to see what we see. We haven't been back to Florida since before the pandemic. We went the year before, we went in 2019, and we haven't been back since. This is going to be us taking that vacation again. And again, you know, spending time with the family, and I hope you're able to do the same. I do want to throw a shout out to my friend Matt McNeil. He's the host on KTNF in Minnesota. He was in an accident. I hope the best for you, brother. Quick recovery, and I hope folks will reach out to Matt and share some well wishes and keep him in your thoughts. If you missed any of today's program, as you know what you can do. You go to find the podcast wherever you get your favorite podcasts, from iTunes to iHeart, Stitcher to Podbean, everywhere in between. You will find The Rick Smith Show there. Also, you can grab the app. Make sure you have the app on your phone. It is available there as well. Also want to hear your thoughts, questions, comments. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.